Hi, I'm Joanne Cormack. I'm a Leverhulme Research Fellow at the University of Nottingham, and at the moment I'm working on a project about composer biographies.
What sort of put you on the trail of this topic?
There's been quite a lot of research in biography in the last few decades, obviously led by kind of English literature. There's been bits and pieces in musicology as well, but they've often tended to focus on maybe one particular composer. So Beethoven is a really obvious one, where we have all these kind of myths about Beethoven that are developed through his biography. I sort of became interested in reading a few of these kind of standalone articles about composers, but I couldn't find an equivalent book that kind of dealt more broadly with how composers are depicted in biography, whereas you can find loads of them about various authors and from the literary side of things. So it seemed to be a bit of a gap to me. I also come from a background of working on Franz Liszt, who had a very colourful life. So even though I was looking very closely at the music, I read a lot of Liszt biographies whilst I was doing that research, and started to become aware of sort of how they informed the way I was approaching his music and things I was listening out for, dramatic things or gothic things or aspects where he's showing off and all religious things. All of these themes that are popping up in his biography seem to pop up in his music a bit as well. And I was starting to think, is this because I'm putting these things onto the music because I'm aware of his life and his personality? Is that informing how I'm coming at the music, or is that something that's already in the music itself? And it's probably a bit of both, to be honest, but it sort of brought about quite a lot of these questions about biography for me.
Could you give us an example of a myth, shall we say, around the way that we think about Liszt, and then how you might find that displayed in a biography, the sort of thing that somebody might write?
Yes, so there are a number of myths in Liszt's biographies that influence how we understand him and his life and his music. In one of the more influential biographies of Liszt, which is by Alan Walker, Liszt comes across as this really generous, wonderful figure who could do no wrong, who just supported everybody else. All these other composers just deserted Liszt. That may well be true aspects of that. I'm sure Liszt does seem to have been quite a generous character. But Alan Walker also glosses over lots of things that are quite the more unsavoury aspects of Liszt's character, because he was a person. So things like Liszt abandoning his children, the way he responded to crowds and attention, kind of seemed to need that. And also lots of his affairs that Alan Walker just seems to suggest didn't happen. He just had kind of two or three loves in his life. All of that just constructs this kind of hagiographical, heroic, godlike figure who's just kind of perfect and puts Liszt on a pedestal. And there's a lot more to who Liszt actually was as there is to everybody.
In other words, these sorts of myths can either lead to somebody being lionised in a way that's perhaps overstating the case, or sanitised when it comes to love affairs or unsavoury attitudes, particularly in 19th century culture. I guess anti-Semitism is a big strand in the way that it's treated, and Liszt's attitude to his own people, his writing about Hungarian music and gypsies and the various problems around those sorts of things. That obviously, within these myths, there is a great deal of dramatic potential. So presumably this is one of the reasons why some composers lend themselves very nicely to being turned into big films.
Yes, I think so. Some composers do lend themselves to being turned into big films because there are certain things in their lives. And Liszt is a good example of that, because he knew everybody. So he was a very social person, and so he pops up in lots of other people's biographies as well. So he's often in films about Chopin or somebody. But there are also things like him just giving up his performing career that was really successful and settling in Weimar. There's stuff about his affairs, going off with a married countess to Switzerland, having illegitimate children, and there's stuff about him becoming a priest, obviously, later on. All these very surprising twists and turns in his biography that make him a good subject for a film. But at the same time, when I was researching this, I also found that there was this tension, especially with earlier films, kind of from the 1940s and 50s. A lot of the Hollywood blockbuster film scripts had to go past the production censor. And so the scripts had to be submitted to someone who would read it and make sure there was nothing that was going to upset traditional morals. And so if you have a film about a colourful character like Liszt, then there are going to be things about divorce and illegitimate children and affairs and things like that that would be a problem for the censor. So I was reading in the files about the film's struggles to get these films kind of past the censor, but at the same time, probably no one would want to write a script about a composer who had a less colourful life. So it's quite a complicated thing, and you don't find as many films about Mendelssohn, for example, who was just seemed to be the perfect gent in a lot of ways, and Victorians loved him, and he was very well mannered, and nothing really dramatic happened to him apart from he died early. So I wondered if that was to do with because he just didn't have an exciting enough life, or that you wouldn't have the censorship issues. You have to kind of weigh those two up, and at the same time you also have the anti-Semitism reception issues around Mendelssohn as well, which may well have stopped people making films. So there are all sorts of reasons about why you would choose a particular subject, and then how you actually construct that life and make it palatable when you've got to worry about censorship issues.
That's really interesting. So sort of focusing on Liszt, because the paper that you're giving is predominantly about depictions of Liszt in film, and you've called your paper Interfaces Between Research and Popular Culture. So I'm wondering if you can take us through an example of how the kind of academic sources that you've been looking at, the kind of written biographical sources that you've been looking at, how they might be used or indeed conveniently rewritten for dramatic effect for a film script.
What I found is that not many film writers use musicological sources. The only types of musicological sources they use are biographies, and only a particular type of biography. So they're not going to read any music analysis, which is unsurprising, I suppose. And they're not really going to read journal articles. But they do read biographies. They seem to be attracted to biographies that already have quite a strong narrative arch, they're already quite literary in their tone and the way they're constructed. One of the films I've looked at that's not actually about Liszt, but Liszt is in it because he's in all of them, is Song of Love, which is about Robert and Clara Schumann. And there are extensive research notes for this film in the Margaret Herrick Library in LA. The notes show that there's one particular biography, Burke's Clara Schumann, that is just used all the time, and the person researching the film has written out loads and loads of extracts from this particular biography. And when you read what they've found useful, it is all the very dramatic episodes, a lot of stuff about Robert and Clara's courtship, passing letters in secret, the nanny being involved as a go-between, the court scene with Clara's father trying to prevent them getting married. It's all things that you could easily picture in a film that this researcher has taken from the biography. And they also take bits where a biographer has had a bit of a flight of fancy as well, and maybe embellished something that we can't possibly know about. So in this particular biography, the author put in dialogue that he's just made up, and insight of how the characters were feeling at particular times that he wouldn't know. Even though researchers are using biographical sources, some of which may have been written by musicologists, they tend to go for more literary biography, less scholarly biography, biography that tries to interpret a bit and is a literary genre rather than just a chronological series of facts, which we might prefer as musicologists because we're a little bit scared sometimes about interpreting things.
There seems to be a tension then between reality and the things that as musicologists we don't like lacunae in information. We want to know what the details are and stick to the information as best as we can trace it.
Yeah.
And then what makes good drama indeed kind of occupying those very spaces, those spaces where there isn't the information and therefore you're free to create and imagine. So do you think that that, because obviously the biopic has potential to be a way of mediating between researchers in all kind of colours and flavours, as it were, and the general public, a way of bringing that historical research that's being done to a wider audience through film. Do you think that could ever work in a really historically responsible way, given the fact that there needs to be that dramatic tension, that room to invent?
There would have to be a lot of compromise between musicologists and filmmakers in order for their relationship to kind of responsibly, if you like, depict the past in a historically accurate way. I found it interesting. I interviewed Sarah Knochen, who wrote the screenplay for Impromptu, which is a Hugh Grant film about Chopin and George Sand. And one of her comments was that she felt really liberated when there was a gap in the historical record, because she felt that that gave her the license to then go on and embellish. And as long as she stayed true to the characters, as long as she's kind of read up enough and felt like she knew how they'd respond, then she felt she could embroider bits where there were gaps. Whereas us as musicologists probably wouldn't want to do that. We'd stick to what we could actually prove with evidence.
The staying true to the character thing I find interesting. So there's obviously a sense in which film researchers are trying to identify a personality through the biographical writing, which I guess is why they want to read more literary works, because there has to be a degree of interpretation in order to kind of round that personality out.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they've got enough information, it's like they can just sort of set that person down and let them do whatever they want and change facts accordingly.
Yeah, yeah, that seems to be the case. Sarah Knochen also said that she doesn't always like to work with academic consultants, which I found quite interesting because she said that they can be quite proprietorial, which I wasn't completely surprised by. So I think there would have to be some compromise between someone writing the film taking responsibility for making sure that things were as accurate as possible, and there would have to be some discussion about how you deal with gaps in the record. But then there probably also would have to be some understanding from the historical consultant's point of view that this isn't a book, this isn't a scholarly work, this is a film that has a narrative, that has dramatic needs that need to be fulfilled. I don't think we kind of help the situation if we are proprietorial about the past. I mean, we don't own the past any more than a filmmaker would own the past anyway. For biopics to actually fulfil a more satisfactory role in bringing people closer to the musical past, to an accurate version of the musical past, then I think we would have to work more closely with producers, directors, screenplay writers, with some understanding that there is a fictional aspect to any film.
Yeah, there's a different set of priorities when you're making a film than there are if you're, as you say, trying to write a biography.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are definitely examples of films where the historical record has been stretched far beyond recognition so that it's ludicrous. And the obvious example of that is Ken Russell's Listomania, which, if you've seen it, is very outlandish, very garish, and was reacted to quite badly by lots of people, and not just musicologists. It was quite shocking to lots of different members of the audience because there was a lot of gratuitousness, nudity. I've shown it to my students in the past and I've had to kind of give a disclaimer at the start for some of the more fantastical scenes. And there's a lot of fantasy scenes as well. But I think this comes back to getting the essence of the character right. I actually think that Listomania is quite accurate in lots of ways, even though Wagner is a vampire at the end and also comes back from the dead. Obviously, that's not true. But
as far as we know.
And there are other things like that. But there's still a grain of truth in a lot of it, particularly the way List is portrayed. List, lots of different aspects of this personality or portrayed, his relationship to Hungary, which was strained in different, sometimes he felt guilt about it, sometimes he felt very nationalistic, but he also neglected Hungary for a long time, and the different aspects of List's kind of religious faith, which seemed quite genuine, but also his inability to stick to the rules of Catholicism and his need to be a showman. All these different aspects of List's personality all do come across in the film in quite a complex way that actually give us a three-dimensional character that you don't get in lots of the other biopics, which on the surface seem a bit truer to the facts.
And actually, Ken Russell is an interesting one here. Listomania is not the only film around composers that he's made, the Richard Chamberlain film Tchaikovsky, The Music Makers, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Where again, Ken Russell is somebody who uses the fantastical and these imagined scenes as a way into the material, a very different and slightly crazy way into the material.
Mm.
Are we saying that then potentially there are some really outlandish narrative strategies that can work in film that you wouldn't be able to make work on the written page?
Mm. I think that is a potential of film that could be exploited. More experimental biopics where you play around with the chronological order of things, or maybe you use the potentials of the medium of film, maybe overlaying different images or sounds, flashbacks and flash forwards, montages. There are all sorts of different things that you could do that might avoid having this kind of linear structure of a life that we often have in biographies, where one thing leads to another, and we know that there's an end goal in sight. So Schumann's biography is an obvious example. There are several biographies that are kind of written with the knowledge that his mental decline at the end of his life and death in an asylum. Lots of biographies are written with that kind of in mind, and so they foreshadow it earlier on in the biography, and we look out for examples of Schumann's madness all the way through. If you play around with the chronology more with film and maybe with the images and the sounds and things like that, you could avoid that linear narrative. So I think there are ways in which maybe film could be even more accurate in portraying lives than the written word can be. The reasons why someone would write a biography in the first place are quite interesting and sometimes different from the reasons why someone might make a film. If you have been working with a particular composer, like I've spent a long time working with Liszt, I've been to Weimar, I've seen where he lived, I've looked at his music, I've seen his handwriting, I've read lots and lots about him. That does make you feel like you know a person. And I think probably most biographers come to the subject already knowing quite a lot and thinking that they have an idea of how they're going to construct this person, what that person's personality was like. But you do get some people who go into writing a biography and they want to write something that's antagonistic against the person. And also, you're not always aware, I don't think, of your relationship to the historical figure anyway. So you could go into writing biography thinking, I'm going to be really objective about this. But in the end, it's kind of impossible. And you also find lots of people who write biographies about people that they're drawn to anyway and think that they're kind of like that person. So I went to a talk at the Edinburgh Festival recently by Simon Callow, who's writing a biography of the Orson Welles. And he began the talk by outlining all these similarities that he felt between himself and Orson Welles as both actors and things that they were doing at different stages in their life. And so you could tell that was what motivated him to begin with to write that biography, because he saw himself in this person. You're probably always going to write something that's a bit sympathetic if you identify with somebody. Whereas a filmmaker, maybe the subject was suggested to them by somebody else anyway, so they don't always have that really close personal relationship. Then maybe they've spent less time with a composer, they have to get other people onto their team. It's quite collaborative, more so than writing a biography is, I think. Because as musicologists, we go out and we go to different archives and talk to archivists and we give papers at conferences. So it is collaborative in that sense, but not quite to the extent that you have in film, where an actor is reading their own material about whoever they're portraying, so they've got their own interpretation, the director has their vision, obviously, that goes across the whole film. There are people researching costumes and locations, you've got producers. So there are lots and lots of different elements to a film, which I think would also prevent it having that very single interpretation by one particular person who's got a very close relationship with the subject. So perhaps there is more potential for being a little bit more objective in film than a written biography as well.
Can we turn maybe now to the methodology of this kind of research? Could you tell us a little bit about the ins and outs of working with a video archive?
Well, there are lots of different sources that you can use for this sort of research. I've used the BFI archive in London. Well, they have lots of obscure films that you can go and watch. They also have lots of images to do with productions, which you can only access in their archive, but it gives you a sense of the preparation behind the visual aspects of the film. So you have sketches of costumes and also how it was marketed, lots of publicity images as well. And they have lots of written documents, scripts, and there are notes on the scripts, and there are lots of other things to do with the production that they document as well. And I've used similar sources at the USC and Margaret Herrick libraries, which are both in LA, which have similar sources. I also used the Library of Congress in DC, which have a massive motion picture collection, and they have really obscure films. They have kind of a lot of silent films and very early things. So you go in and they kind of rig it all up on their exciting machines. Working with those sorts of materials is quite different from reading lots of different sources. I just approached it with having my research questions in mind of how these composers are being depicted in these films, what stages was music being used, was there a particular narrative reason behind putting that particular piece in that particular aspect. So it's just watching critically, really, was the way I approached it, and going back and watching again and rewatching.
In terms of disseminating the research, the work that you've gathered as a result of doing all of this, so you've gone away, you've done your archival research, this material is destined for conference papers, presumably for articles and books further along the line.
Yeah.
What are the copyright implications, given the material that you're working with, in making examples available of the kind of things that you're talking about?
I think it would depend on how old the films are, whether they're still in copyright or not. A film is a bit of a tricky one for copyright because it's a collaborative medium, so there are lots of people that you would have to acknowledge. I'm probably going to stick mostly to images from the films when I disseminate my research. So I'll be doing a book which will have some stills that I'll get copyright permission from the archive that holds those images. But that's not always the case. So the American archives do hold the copyright for the images, but I found out that the BFI don't have copyright for the images that I've looked at in their archive, which is why I could only look at them in the archive and they wouldn't let me take any copies. So for those, you have to go back to the director or the production company who would own the copyright of the film. And if I were to do a website with clips from the films, then I would have to go to the production company to get copyright.
And you mentioned having a website. I mean, this kind of research really lends itself to a digital publishing medium as well, to having, even if you've published a book, having some kind of supportive web material. So this is a good time to be working on this kind of material, right? Because we're now in a position where publishing things that have multimedia aspects is much more doable than it was even 5 or 10 years ago.
Yes. I may well have an accompanying website with the book that comes out of this project, because I think it would be useful for there to be some sort of repository where people could go and say, oh, I want to look at clips of Liszt in film or Chopin in film, and be able to find a few kind of representative examples, or at least to be able to easily watch the things that I'm talking about, because that's the other issue with it. But I'm going to be talking about in the book lots of these films in detail, and some of them are quite obscure films that I don't really expect everyone to have seen. So I think an accompanying website would be quite a useful thing to do, but I haven't quite got there yet.
Lots of logistics still to sort. So I'm just interested, we've talked a lot about the different modes of storytelling that are used in your written biography, your scholarly biography, versus your Hollywood epic of the Schumann love story being a great classic, and of course, as you say, Liszt as well being such a great figure, and Beethoven, all good heroes to have at the centre of your story. Even if there is an amount of dramatic licence being taken here, do you think that these films have something to teach musicologists about ways of telling stories in musical history?
I think there's a bit of a turn in musicology and in several other disciplines away from the creator, which is a healthy thing, because we can idolise the creator and get too bogged down and not think about the other people and other kind of institutions and contexts that influence a musical work. But I still don't think we can ignore the figure of the composer. Biopics do bring you that bit closer to the figure of the composer. Often biopics draw heavily on diaries and letters to get at the composer's voice, but they also bring alive the composer's world, and so you see the composer in a fairly accurate setting, because this is something that biopics have as a strength, that they do quite a lot of research about what Liszt's apartment would have looked like, or what Chopin would have had for his breakfast, and what Schumann's study looked like, and make sure they set it up properly. You learn a lot about the composer's environment and their world, which I don't think we as musicologists have been as interested in as filmmakers have been. I'm still sort of figuring out why we need to know about these things, but I'm sure that they can tell you about the creative process of the composer, his daily habits. They can tell us about how creative people work more generally, about day-to-day life in the 19th century. There's more social aspects of musicology, which are all useful things for us to know about. So there's a risk of focusing too much on these great men, but I think there's also something about the broader environment in which they work that we can learn from biopics as well.
And do you think there are any great women who either have their own biopics already or are deserving of having a biopic about them, rather than it all being centred around the male composer?
There don't seem to be many biopics of great women, sadly. But there are more and more biographies of women that could easily be turned into biopics. But actually, I think the composer biopic seems to be going out of fashion generally anyway. But Clara Schumann turns up in quite a lot of biopics, but it's just because she's the wife of Robert Schumann. You don't really get Fanny Mendelssohn in biopics, because no one seems to be interested in doing biopics of Mendelssohn anyway. Someone like Ethel Smythe might be a good subject for a biopic. There's lots of potential there, but I don't know if there's a market there, unfortunately.
Oh, well, we live in hope, but it would be a rollicking good film if it were about Ethel Smythe,
wouldn't
it?
Yeah, I think so.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed, Joan.
No problem.